Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Brought to you by the Desai Group, which you can visit at www.desai.com. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and I'm joined by my producer and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Stone. How was your weekend?
Well, it was a lot of fun. Played video games again. I'm really getting good. Well, I'm not getting good. My 11-year-old still kills me. But I played video games. And the other thing I did, you know, I've had so much fun and so much success hosting this radio show. I mean, I'm connecting with so many people. So I got an idea over the weekend.
A video game that's a radio show.
Well, you know what? You're close. I thought, you know, if the radio show, if this is working so well, what if maybe once a week or so I got on my webcam and shared some of that brilliant Stone wisdom? And so I did a little bit of checking with my 15-year-old, 16-year-old now. She got me up and running where I could get the webcam to where it would record me. So then I decided I would do some webcam research. So just a little warning out there to the listening audience. Should you decide to do some webcam services research, you may very well find, as I did, that there are some people out there, quite a few, that have a very different take on the business application
of a webcam.
Of a webcam.
Really?
Make a sailor blush. So that was a very interesting experience this weekend.
So you got to have another talk with your daughter, didn't you?
Yes, I did. But we had a good time. And, of course, I'm spending a lot of my energy right now getting ready for Innovation Week, the week of February 16th. Jatin Desai with the Desai Group is coming down and doing that executive session on Thursday right here at 1 Glen Lake Parkway, where our studios are located. And then we're all headed out to the Timmy Party, the year's most innovative, out at Rome, Atlanta. So we got a lot going on.
Yeah, can't wait. Big time.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a great show for you this morning. Our first guest is a gentleman by the name of Matthew Heim, and he is president of Nine Sigma. And Matthew's got quite an interesting background. He spent some time in the military service, as I understand it, as a German interpreter. And also has been a consultant with organizations that I'm sure all of you will recognize, including Coopers and Libran, which, of course, now, well, I think they became PricewaterhouseCoopers, and I don't know, I think they may even have some connection to IBM these days, but KPMG Pete Morwick. And he was also with Tech9 Systems Corporation in Heidelberg, Germany. But Matthew is now focusing his energy on strategic visioning, organizational development, and systems thinking. And he's authored a new book called, and I hope you'll forgive me if I pronounce this wrong, we'll get it all straight in a little bit, but he's the author of a new book, Breaking the Musashi Code, Transcending Competition Through Visionary Strategy. So looking forward to talking with Matthew this morning, and particularly interested in talking with this gentleman about the concept of open innovation. So let's welcome him to the show and ask him about that. Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thank you, Stone. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Just right off the bat, it would really be helpful to me, and I'm sure our listeners as well, if you could help us get our arms around this idea of a term I think we're starting to see a lot, this business of open innovation. What is it?
Open innovation is really a very simple concept that has existed for quite some time, but it really didn't have a term behind it. And in right around 2004, Henry Chesbrough wrote a book on open innovation, which really just launched the whole open innovation scene across multiple industries. And the idea of open innovation is nothing more than going outside of your four walls to find solutions on problems that you're working on, whether it be in R&D, in manufacturing, across the supply chain, and even in your demand chain.
And so what reluctance, if any, because I sense there may be some, are you running across when you're bringing this idea to an organization? Do you sense any resistance about going outside the collective to allow other people to enter in and learn what we're doing enough to and have enough context to help us innovate?
We do see this on occasion. You know, many companies still have the not invented here mentality, which is, you know, sometimes hard to break. they feel that they need to guard their intellectual property, and by opening up to the outside world, they're threatening, you know, allowing other people to get their hands on their intellectual property that they've spent years developing. But within the services that, for example, Nine Sigma provides, there's strict confidentiality all through the process, so that you know, a solution provider may not even know which company they're talking to until both parties determine that, you know, it's time to negotiate and you lift the veil. And by that time, they've signed confidentiality agreements and so forth. So it's a relatively safe and proven process.
Can you walk us through one of those experiences with a client of yours, of how it works from start to finish?
Sure. I can shed light on one example that I have with a company that deals with, now brace yourself, but frozen blood and plasma. I mean, there are people out there who deal with this type of thing, but you know, they were looking for a solution that would allow blood to be thawed evenly and quickly. And they'd spent years looking for, you know, ways to improve this solution, or find a solution for this, so that they could get blood more quickly and efficiently out into the field to be used. So they finally came to us, and we immediately put out a search for them and came up with a number of solutions. But the solution that they chose came out of the microwave food industry. And it was a packaging company that focused on packaging microwave foods. Now, of course, you don't want to microwave blood, but on the other hand, we help connect companies with these what we call unobvious solutions, unobvious connections. And this is we have endless examples of this type of connection that we're finding for companies.
So then they ended up working together?
They ended up working together. Mm-hmm.
And so Nine Sigma, at least part of your business model, is you coordinate, you broker these relationships, and you provide the governance and infrastructure to make it work?
Well, we define our open innovation universe as both connect and enable. In other words, we help companies to connect with the outside, with the global innovation community, and we have a vast network of solution providers in virtually every country in the world. We provide solution searches, we provide intelligence studies, we help develop consortia, and we help companies develop elite networks of, you know, teams of solution providers that may help them on a particular project or program that they're working on. Now, on the other end of that spectrum, we have what we call enable. We help also enable organizations to pool in that intellectual property through deal facilitation, through training, process, and organization redesign, so that they can more quickly and more efficiently pool in this intellectual property. Because what happens is, a lot of times we make a connection and the organization is not prepared internally to integrate that new IP. Mm-hmm. So what happens, it sits on the shelf and it just, you know, both parties lose interest, and what could have been just a great connection for that company begins to dissipate.
It's an intriguing idea to me, and I bet it is to most of our listeners, but is now in this economy really the right time to take a serious look at open innovation, or is it just one of those things maybe we ought to start to get a little smarter about and think about down the road?
Oh, no, there's no better time than right now. If, one of the first areas that companies are cutting, they go right to their cost centers. You know, they're going right to R&D, for example, and they're cutting costs.
Yeah.
So how can you maintain your competitive edge when your research and development arm is being basically chopped off? So what we do is we provide them a means to in a very inexpensive rate go outside to the outside world, remain competitive, cut the cost and time of their normal innovation cycle, and allow them to introduce products to the market earlier than they would have ever anticipated. So this is the time to really be looking at open innovation as a means of maintaining your edge and being able to do more for less. Because, as you know, companies that don't innovate in a down market, when the market starts to pick back up, they tend to lose their brand.
Now, you had mentioned earlier that one of the services you provide is kind of put together this really robust network of innovators throughout the world. How do you vet that network?
We have a team of PhD scientists from multiple disciplines. And when we talk to a company that's interested in going out through our Global Innovation Network, we really interview them and really listen to the need that they have. And they may say that they want something that's very product-focused and very product-oriented, but we boil that down to the basic science or technology. And when we develop an RFP that we're going to put out to the outside community, we just put that basic knowledge that they need, and we put that into a taxonomy, and we have a database of solution providers that we'll send this out to. When that information comes back in, we help them. We work together with our clients to determine, you know, which one is really more seriously
the best
more,
fit.
Pardon me?
Which one is really the best fit for their...
Is the relevant fit for exactly what they're looking for, exactly.
Now, is that what you're speaking about this evening? I understand that you're on the platform this evening at a conference in Arizona.
Yes, I'm at the CODEV conference in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'll be talking about exactly that, about Nine Sigma Solutions, our network, and some examples, some case studies of what we've done.
So Nine Sigma, that's better than Six Sigma?
Six Sigma is about continuous improvement. Nine Sigma is about breakthrough.
I like it.
Breakthrough. So that's three extra sigma for breaking.
There you go. There you go.
And how about the new book? Is it about open innovation, or what else is contained in the new book?
It's about innovation in the strategic planning cycle. You know, for years, companies have been focused on competitive strategy. And what happens is when you focus on your competition, you benchmark with your competition, you develop industry best practices, it tends to create a homogenized network. Well, what I'm trying to encourage companies to do, and some of the things that I've done in the past with many of my former clients, is to get them to focus on breakthrough ideas, you know, develop a new vision that goes beyond what anybody is doing today, but, you know, take that leap forward and be the pioneer in a new area. And companies that have done that and have actually gone through this, and I've written about them, I've put case studies in the book as well, have really experienced a tremendous breakthrough in their ability internally and within the competitive landscape. They've just done extremely well.
Can you share one of those breakthroughs?
Sure. I worked with a company that was actually developed through a series of mergers and acquisitions, and there was just a lot of infighting. There was a lot of confusion. They didn't have a direction. They had a great product, but the competition was really starting to set in. They weren't innovating. They were just very, very, you know, stagnant. So I pulled the company together. I pulled the whole leadership team together, and I took them through a series of visioning and visualization exercises to get them outside of today's thinking, today's issues, and really focusing on what tomorrow could look like. And this company that was really suffering was able to turn around within a year and a half, and they were put right in the driver's seat. They dominated the industry basically in infusion pumps. And provided new breakthrough technologies. You know, they came out with new bundling solutions around their products that just put them on the cutting edge, and they just did extremely well after that.
What do you think it was that helped you persuade them to make this kind of a drastic change when they were just kind of in a more stable setting, that you were really saying, okay, now you got to really do something dramatic here? And, you know, what made them kind of tip to go with what you recommended?
Well, I think they realized that they were in a lot of pain. I think they realized that they were in financial trouble and the company wasn't doing that well. And they had a visionary CEO who came in and really was interested in transforming the company. And it took pain to motivate this company, unfortunately. But the whole premise of the book is you don't have to wait till that pain point is there. You can put yourself on a continuous cycle of breakthrough ideas and idea generation, and just ride that wave throughout your career.
When you're contracting with these organizations, does it usually start with the CEO, or is it somebody a little lower that introduces you to the C-level people?
It depends. You know, a lot of times you'll meet a CEO who would be interested. And again, this is with my previous profession before coming to Nine Sigma. But the contacts, sometimes it would be a bottom-up. Sometimes it would be, you know, starting right at the CEO level. Sometimes I would be brought in from somebody who was on the board of directors of a company that I was helping, who said, hey, I'm on the board of another company, and I need you over here. And that, you know, we would be brought in that way as well.
Matthew, you shed a little bit of light on this whole idea of open innovation. There's another term that I come across a lot, and that's sustainability. Can you describe your take on sustainability and what connection, if any, there is between that and your idea of open innovation?
Absolutely. It's you know, sustainability is just something that we all have to be focusing on right now, because you know, resources, you're looking at peak oil, peak water, peak food. We're all in this boat together. So, you know, companies need to start looking at, you know, where they're getting the resources from. How do we replenish resources that we've used? How do we handle, you know, how can we handle in a very innovative way recycling, reusing raw materials and products? And open innovation is just a fantastic way to leapfrog an organization into a more sustainable way of operating. I'll give you an example. There are many companies that you know, they have products that perhaps have toxic raw materials in them. You have, you know, the whole ink and toner industry that have heavy metals. You have foods that have things that probably shouldn't be in there. And a lot of these companies, they just don't have the core competency to be able to, you know, transform instantly into, you know, something into a new idea that will make them more sustainable and provide more sustainable solutions. And so they're coming to us more and more, and we're doing a lot of these projects recently where they're coming to us looking for solutions for, you know, using alternatives to petroleum-based products, looking at new ways to develop energy technology that would be more sustainable, using the sun, using the Earth's crust, under the Earth's crust. They're just, you know, new ways of using photovoltaics in appliances, heat collection in IT, in computer rooms, and in automobiles. There's just an awful lot going on right now that we don't see because it hasn't been productized yet. Mm-hmm. But believe me, the innovation is there, and companies are really starting to wake up, and it's very gratifying to be able to work in this space.
Well, that has to be very rewarding work to be right in the thick of that kind of innovation. If our listeners, and I'm sure they do, want to learn more about open innovation and more about Nine Sigma and maybe get their hands on your new book, The Musashi Code, Breaking the Musashi Code, what's the best way for them to connect with you, Matthew?
Well, the best way to connect, if they're looking at open innovation, is to go to our website, www.ninesigma.com. That's Nine Sigma spelled out, NINESIGMA. And the book is available basically anywhere online. You can go to, you know, BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. Just look for Breaking the Musashi Code, and the book is out there.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Atlas Books is the distributor. They have. They also have several thousand copies on hand that they can send out right away.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having you on the show, Matthew. But before we let you go, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career and really, more importantly, what they've learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Oh, boy.
We only have a couple minutes left. We've got another guest coming up now, Matthew.
Okay. There's one that I think is really that really ties into this topic of innovation, and that's, I learned early on in my career about the law of momentum. I was given an opportunity to work on several projects simultaneously, and one was going very well, so I started focusing on these other two projects that were having some trouble, and I came back a couple of weeks later to this other project only to realize that the energy just dissipated. The energy was gone. Resources were reallocated. I lost momentum. And that was such a valuable learning to me that, you know, if you want to keep something alive, you've got to keep the momentum, whether it be with a phone call, with a simple follow-up, or, you know, a delegation of some type of an activity. You've got to keep the momentum going. I view it like a big boulder in a field. You know, you try to roll the boulder, and it's very difficult to get started and unseat it. But once you get it going, it rolls nice. But once you stop, it sits back in, and it's never the same to get that thing rolling again. So
you heard it right here. From Matthew Heim, you got to keep the mo.
That's it. You got it.
Hey, thanks, Matthew. We really appreciate it. It was a real delight having you on the show.
Thank you, Stone. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So did our other guests make it on the line, Lee?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, next up, we have Holly Green with the Human Factor. And Holly has just got a tremendous amount of experience as an internal and external resource for organizations. She's worked with the Coca-Cola Company, AT&T, Dell Computer. I mean, her resume and background just reads like a hoo-hoo. She's done work with Microsoft and Google, and she's former president of the Blanchard Companies. Got a ton of questions that I know I want to ask her, so let's go ahead and get her on. Welcome to the show, Holly.
Good morning. Thank you.
We are delighted to have you. I don't know if you got a chance to hear anything from our first guest, but we were talking a little bit about this idea of open innovation, and it was really interesting to hear him talk about the way organizations were beginning to collaborate to help each other. And so really interested to hear with your diverse experience what you're seeing inside the companies that you're serving with respect to innovation. Can you just give us a little bit of background on the kind of work you do and what you're seeing with respect to innovation?
Certainly. I do a lot of strategic planning work. That's about 50% of my time. And that's with everyone from some of the biggest guys out there to literally two people in a garage in a startup. And the rest of my time is split in, I do a lot of work in innovation. I actually do about 60 presentations a year on something I call innovating every day, how to think differently moment by moment to get better, faster, stronger. Mm-hmm. So I see a need and work on a lot of projects where I am sort of embedding innovative thought processes, 13 different tips and ways to think differently into almost everything I do. And 2.5 years ago when I started doing that innovating every day presentation, one of the first slides sort of justified why do you need to be innovative today. Well, you can imagine I don't even need to have that slide anymore.
So
gotten pretty clear.
What are some of the reasons that so many of us don't really innovate every day like we should?
Well, the more successful we are, the more we prove ourselves right constantly. You know, the human brain works in that we're screening in and we're screening out information and data on an ongoing basis. And behavioral scientists actually believe we're screening in a very small percentage of data moment to moment. In fact, it's probably about 10%. And so I can constantly prove myself right. I can always give you a piece of data that proves, you know, my opinion, the fact that we've always done this before, that's the way things work here, you know, go on and on with all those sort of innovation killers, but that keeps me doing things over and over. And the more successful I am, of course, the more I'm going to rely on those past practices to continue doing for my success.
So how do you get a company to be open to innovate when they think everything's fine?
Well, you know, luckily most companies today recognize on their own that everything's changing around them and that they, in fact, do have to be more innovative. Not even necessarily just in their products, but in their internal processes and cost efficiencies and just about everything you can imagine. In fact, I'll start working this week with a $9 billion industrial manufacturing company who is known for bringing great products to bear, who is already really great at lean manufacturing and Six Sigma and all of that. But I'm going to help them through innovative thinking approaches tease out another $200 million in operating costs. So we're seeing innovation applied in a whole lot of ways today because really it just takes just a moment or two to pause and look around us and say, wow, if I don't, someone else will, and I'm going to be behind.
Holly, I'm real interested to know if you have any secrets or tips you might share with, I guess the right term for this is how do you, bridling, how do you control the sheer volume and magnitude of ideas that you can get if you get a bunch of smart folks all vested in a common interest in the room and you've convinced them that innovation is important? Well, then how do you contain that and make it commercially viable? It seems like it could just get out of control in a hurry.
Well, it definitely could, especially if you're trying to have one or two people look at all those ideas. So the way that you manage that is by driving those ideas down to a place in the organization where the decision can get made and something can happen so that you don't have to have bottlenecks in the process. If you're building an innovative organization, there are really several components that all have to fit together. You have to have a culture of innovation that, you know, communicates and acknowledges innovation, that gets people excited about doing it, that encourages them to do it, that holds them accountable, in fact, for every day, in every way, pausing every now and then to say, what if we did this differently? What if? You've got to have the leadership that encourages the risk-taking, that ensures some consistency and trust. People have to be confident at doing this, by the way. Most people are never taught how and why we behave the way we do, especially from an innovation perspective. It's really hard to do it different if you don't even know why you're doing it the way you are today.
That makes sense.
Then you do have to have some processes, certainly, because innovation doesn't make a lot of sense for innovation purposes. It's got to tie to your strategy. And you'll find that when it does tie to the strategy and it has real business impact, then you have sort of this virtuous cycle. Otherwise, you know, it's a flash in the pan kind of thing. Oh, my goodness, you know, the boss read a book on innovation and now suddenly he's running around doing all this stuff.
So you don't find that works, the book? Is that what you're saying?
It's good money for consultants.
Okay, you can stop with the book now, Stone.
There is one book that isn't, well, actually two. There's one from 2002 written by this guy down in Georgia, but there's one book that's an exception, as I understand it, and it's called More Than a Minute. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about the book and what you're trying to accomplish with the message there.
Certainly. More Than a Minute, it's how to be an effective leader and manager in today's changing world. And it really takes a refreshing look at the original secrets that were in the One-Minute Manager, which was written more than 26 years ago. So if you pause for just a moment and think about the significant changes in the work world in the last 10 years, much less the last 26, I really felt like it was time to take a new look at those three secrets. And for your listeners out there that may not have read it recently, it's a very simple read, and it was truly revolutionary when it was published at the time, and it is the best-selling all-time management book. The problem is that the three secrets are one-minute goal setting, tell your employee what to do this week. The second secret is one-minute reprimand.
Uh-huh.
Let me know how that works for you.
Yeah.
And the third secret is one-minute praising, which certainly has withstood the test of time. We still all love to be rewarded and recognized and acknowledged for our values. So of the three secrets, one has withstood the test of time, but the other two look very, very different. So my book is not a parable. It's very much a reference guide with tools, tips, checklists, alternatives, and ways to go through and sort of do the basics. It starts with strategic planning, goes through communications, feedback, learning and unlearning, sustaining alignment in an organization, and creating the context for excellence to occur.
So what are some of your secrets in your book that you can share?
You know, I'm not sure mine have any secrets. It's just all put together in one easy place. I'll tell you one thing that I find people really relate to and find can make a huge difference in their business, no matter the size or the shape of it, and that's to define what winning looks like. Get really clear on excellence. And you know, that used to be your 10-year strategic plan. These days we do 3-year strategic plans, and for many clients right now I'm doing 1-year strategic plans because things are just changing so crazy in some sectors even more than others. So get clear. What does it look like at the end of the year if we have been amazingly successful? make sure as a leader that you can articulate that and that you are articulating that constantly, and make sure you're sharing that and your employees are running the same race that you're running. Everybody works hard today. Very few people show up at work in the morning and say, you know, I want to go in and do just a crappy job today. Most people want to be great, but you need to define excellence for them. What are your expectations? What does it look like when you win? You'll be blown away by the power of that simple approach to get people aligned. And if you keep it in front of people, keep it visible, you'll be able to sustain that energy even through some of the most challenging of times.
How long should it take a company to come up with their one-year plan? How much time should they allocate for that?
Well, it all depends. And that's one of the things I talk a lot about in the book. There is no one right way to do any of this. There are alternatives to all of it, and each approach has an advantage and a disadvantage. And, in fact, I try to outline those any time that I talk about them in the book. You know, think through this. There's an advantage to doing it this way. Here's the disadvantage. So it can take as long as several days or...
How about a year? Should it take you a year to come up with your one-year plan?
It probably should not take a year.
There's some companies that spend a lot of time planning, not a lot of time doing.
Well, yes. And you know, the way that I do planning is very, very tightly connected to doing. It's a big problem today. 78% of CEOs globally will tell you that execution is their greatest challenge. You've got to get focused on doing the right things, and then you do have to do something.
Right, but when you execute, then you can be held accountable. And no one wants to be held accountable if things don't go as planned.
You know, it's interesting. I think about that kind of thing, and I think if we took it to an individual level, most people do. They wouldn't mind being held accountable if only someone would tell them what the heck they're going to be held accountable for. It's when we're not clear. It's when the rules of the game change constantly. It's when I do something, but, oh, my gosh, I don't know if this is going to piss him or her off or not. That's when we get really iffy on that accountability. If we're really clear on excellence and expectations, you'll find people will step up. It's pretty amazing stuff because, again, we all want to be successful.
Holly, in a changing world, I think we all recognize it so often. What the future we're trying to craft can be a little bit of a moving target, or at least that's been my experience. Do you think there's any wisdom in an organization and the leadership behind it being willing from time to time to simply throw your hat over the fence, if you will, and get started, even though you might not be able to concretely define exactly where you're going to land?
Absolutely. It's the thought process that's really important. It's the thinking. It's the energy that you put toward it. And, you know, you can figure it out. Obviously, that's what I do for a living, is help people figure it out by asking the right questions, prompting, pushing, prodding, nagging, whatever it takes. But, you know, there are other tools and resources you can use to help you do that, too. Listen, it's not easy. If it were easy, everyone would have an insanely successful business. World class is not easy.
Well, and absolutely. And you were talking earlier about how important communication is. I would think that communication about where we're going and why is important, but maybe every bit as important is returning the learning from mistakes and feeding that information back to the system so that you can make the adjustments. Do you see that a lot?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, a system produces exactly what it's set up to produce. With the outputs you're getting, that's because your system produces that. If you want to change the outputs, you have to change the system.
I've got another question for you, and it's related to this business of a changing world. I don't know if you'll feel like it's off topic or not, but I am just personally interested in it, and really if and how businesses are truly able to capitalize on some of these new media. But I noticed that you are on this thing called Twitter.
I am.
And I've been on it for a little while, too, since Christmas, and so I'm curious about what what your take is and what your experience has been so far in capitalizing that on that as a medium for your own business or to further some of these ideas that you're sharing with your public.
You know, the social media, I think, is going to continue to gain in importance as far as a way to connect to consumers and customers and clients and just other really cool people. My experience with Twitter has been a very positive one. I really use it much more for business. Some people use it more for personal. But I have connected to people that I probably would have never met otherwise. And I have learned so much more than I ever dreamed possible just through following some of the links and the blogs and the articles that people post. Every day I learn something, and it causes me to pause and think about things that I hadn't thought about before. And that is really, really important for innovation as well, is your brain just has to be stretched a little bit to consider the additional possibilities. So I'm enjoying Twitter. I'm very disciplined in my approach. I could get in there and spend hours and hours and hours going down multiple rabbit holes. But I set aside time and twice a day to look at it and to kind of catch up with what's going on with all the people in my kind of Twitter world. And I try to give back. I try to share things that will be valuable to others. I'm constantly asking, what can I do to help others? Because I get so much from it.
Can you share exactly, like, how are you using it? Are you using it, you know, can you take us through? I know you're kind of monitoring it, but what are you doing to, like, give back to the community and things like that?
I link to my blog and to articles. When I see other great articles out there, I'll relink for people to those, since different followers might have seen them in different forums. So a lot of information sharing.
What about Facebook? I noticed on your bio sheet here there's no Facebook page. Is that on purpose, or is that...
Oh, no, I do have a Facebook. You can be my friend.
But
I do have a Facebook, and building that slowly but surely. That I have found is a little more personal. In the last few weeks even, it's been kind of funny, but I've connected to 10 people I went to high school a very long time ago. So I've found that to be a little different, and probably not as much business information sharing going on, but another valuable tool.
So your key social media right now, you'd say, is Twitter and LinkedIn, maybe?
Twitter and LinkedIn probably are... Yeah, they're probably at the top of my list. I am on Facebook. I'm definitely doing a blog. I do e-zine articles.
What about Seth Godin's Squidoo?
I haven't tried that yet. I have heard things about that, but I haven't tried that yet.
Well, it's just a very interesting and timely topic for us. So many of the guests that we interview either are very passionate about their approach to social media, or like me and Lee, and don't have a clue, and they're trying to get it.
So we have to ask the guests.
That's where we get our intelligence.
Well, you know, I may be an exception to all that. I wouldn't say I'm really, really passionate about it. I've got some friends who have become Twitterholics. You know, and I'm not out there telling everyone what I ate for every meal or where I'm going or what I'm doing constantly. I can't imagine anyone would want to know. Sometimes I don't want to know what I'm doing. But I have found it to be a very useful business tool, a great way, like I said, to learn, but also a really good way to give back, a great way to connect to people that in a whole world that I otherwise probably wouldn't have connected to. So I do think it's a valuable tool. I do think, like anything, you have to get clear on what the purpose is for you, how you're going to use it so that you can effectively manage your time.
I think that's really well said. And I'll tell you... while you were describing how you use Twitter and your purpose for it, I couldn't help but think, wouldn't it be helpful in some of the client systems that people like you serve if you could help them build in some kind of similar architecture where people of like mind with that common interest who have now been truly engaged to be more innovative had some way to very quickly and efficiently build community and share ideas, and you had a place to access talent. I would think that would be really valuable for an organization if they had their own little, I don't know, their own little version of Twitter internally.
Well, and you can certainly do that. You know, you can set that up to happen by who follows and who's following. And we're beginning to see Twitter used at conferences with the trends now, you know, the little hash mark that people use in their messages that all trends together. So we're beginning to see it used in a number of ways, and I think it can be valuable. You can get instant feedback during a meeting. You could gather questions and comments, flashes of brilliance. so I do think we've just touched on the beginnings of how it might be very useful. Now, the problem is there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of options out there for us today.
Yeah.
And so that can make it even more challenging and more difficult. That's why I probably say I'm not as passionate as other people, because I do think there are options, and you just have to find what works best in your system.
Early in our conversation, you shared pretty quickly some of the keys to really wiring an organization for innovation, and among them, you talked about getting the leadership properly equipped to, these are my words, not yours, but what I kind of heard was express, model, and reinforce this innovation behavior that they're seeking from their culture. Could you take just a moment and sort of recap some of those key disciplines or thought patterns, things that you would like to see an organization do differently if they're serious about innovation?
Sure. For leaders, the number one thing you can do is role model. And what you should be role modeling is the ability to pause at the beginning of almost everything, and then sometimes in the middle and sometimes at the end, to say, what if? What if we took a different perspective? What if we looked at this from another angle? What if we considered doing this differently? What if our customers could tell us how to do this? What if? That pause has been stripped away from us. It has been ripped away from our lives. Think about it for a moment. The PDA is the best example. We are constantly focused on those emails where we're told we've won the Nigerian lottery. Highly unlikely. And so are you focusing your time and energy on the right things? And that pause is so critical for innovation, because you've got to trigger your brain to think about it differently. You've got, and to do that, you have to take 5 seconds, maybe 10 whole seconds. So stop for just a moment and say, what if? What if my competitor was looking at my financials? What would they see? What if my customer had one shot to change one thing in the company? What would they do? What if the employees could change one thing? What would they do? And you'd be blown away by how suddenly, with exactly the same data in front of you, you can see very different things.
Just with that very simple prompt, what if?
Very, very simple. And I teach, again, 13 different ways to use that, and everything from considering the opposite to different angles to asking great questions, asking questions in what I call a future active tense. We have been amazingly successful. It's the end of December 2009. What do I see us doing now? Getting people to visualize success. It's exactly the same principle our Olympic athletes use.
Well, I certainly... I'm sorry, go ahead.
What does it look like when we win?
Well, I certainly can't wait to learn more. And if you're ever in Atlanta conducting any kind of open enrollment session, or you can con a client into letting me sit in, I would love to see some of that work. I'm just enamored with everything you've said so far, and wish we could talk to you all day. We're starting to run out of time here, but a couple of things I want to make sure we do. One, so that our listeners can get in touch with you and access your thought leadership and talk to you directly, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Probably the easiest thing, well, of course they can go to Twitter, and I'm Holly G. Green. but the easiest way might be to visit morethanaminute.com. And that's got my blog and contact information, and should have the calendar back up soon. So all the things that I'm doing. And I always love to hear from people, and I really have an abundance mentality. I think there's more than enough to go around for all of us out there. So any way that I can help people share information, always happy to do that.
Oh, that sounds terrific. Well, listen, before we let you go, we'd like you to do one more thing for us, if you would. Would you be willing to contribute to what we call our Return to Learning segment and share a mistake that you've made somewhere in your career and what you learned from it?
And how many hours do we have?
all in like in the space of a couple of minutes.
You know what? I think the biggest mistake, and I continue to make this mistake. It's funny how sometimes we really do have to learn the hard way. But it's around diffusing my energies. I let things pull me in too many different directions and chase too many opportunities. Innovation today and being successful today requires focus. And I think that's a very hard thing to do. Again, most of the world is set up and everything around us is set up to not help us focus. And so, you know, my greatest learning is when I focus, I'm successful. And my clients are more successful, and I do a better job for other people. but I've constantly got to remind myself to do that.
You talked to my producer and co-host Lee Cantor before the show, didn't he? He told you to say that. He's always on me about focus, but it's such
I say advice to him, I go, Stone, what if you were more focused?
What would I see you doing?
What would future Stone look like if he was focused?
Holly, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on, and hopefully we'll get you on the show again sometime, and look forward to meeting you personally, if at all possible, as well.
I'm happy to do it any time. Don't hesitate to ask. Thank you so much for the opportunity to chat with you and your listeners.
You are more than welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Until next week, this is Stone Payton, Holly Green, and Matthew Heim, Lee Cantor, and the entire Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.